Today's share of the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Kesubos, Daf Pei Beis. Mi'etz Hashem, we'll finish off this parak, the wonderful eighth parak, and Mi'etz Hashem start the ninth parak and do Pei Gimel Amet Aleph Mi'etz Hashem. We're learning today Le'ili Nishmas Murray Berner. We're also learning today Le'ili Nishmas David Poreth of Cleveland, Ohio. David Ben Harav Yisrael. This is 36th yard site, and the family is dedicating the shir in Le'ili Nishmas. So all the shows we learn for should have an aliyah from all learning. We begin at the two dots, about eight lines down from the top of Pei Beis Amud Aleph. And we have an interesting story, similar to the story we had from yesterday. We'll see slight differences between this and yesterday's story. So we have the story here about how Gav, a certain man, Denofle Yevoma B'masa M'chasya. Nebuch, his brother, died, and the brother had a wife. The wife and the brother never had children. The brother never had children, therefore she falls in Yivim to him. So she's a Shomeris Yavim to this man who lives in Masa M'chasya. Now, Ba Achua Lemivslo Begitamine. This was the oldest remaining brother, and there was a younger remaining brother that, similar to yesterday's story, wanted to throw a get to this woman to passel the older remaining brother from doing even with her. Now, he asked him why. Amalei says, why do you want to do this? My daitech, what are you thinking? You're thinking that I'm going to get all the nechasim from our dead brother? Well, Ano benichse polgin aloch, I'll split it with you. I'll give you half of it. So Amalei, so the younger brother says, nah, nah, Mistafina, I'm afraid over here, the avadisli ki the ovid pumpidiso ramah. I'm afraid that you're going to do to me what this cheater from Pumpadisa did. Now, this is the story that we had from yesterday. So Rashi tells us, Chazar bo pumpididois in Dibamasu Pumpadisa Ramah, Shachri Kane, after the same exact story happened in Pumpadisa with a older brother who said to the younger brother, don't worry, I'll split it with you after I do Yibam with her. And then subsequently, he didn't do it. He did Yibam, and after the Yibam, he said, no, I ain't giving you anything. And he took him to court. And that's when Rav Yosef, Rashi brings down later on, that's when Rav Yosef, this case was brought to him, and he said, sorry, anything that you have done, the transaction is null and void. That's what we were doing in yesterday's Shia. So here, in this situation, the younger brother says, I'm afraid you're going to do to me what that cheater in Pumpadisa did to his younger brother. Mistafina Davaritza Li, I'm afraid that you're going to do to me, Kidavid Pumpadisa Ramot, like that cheater in Pumpadisa did, and he lied to his younger brother. So here, in our case, in Masa Bachasi, the older brother says, Amalei, listen, Yibais, if you want, Palog Loch Mehashta, go and take the property from this moment or not. Now, he obviously can take the property. It doesn't yet belong to him. But what he basically told him was, you'll be konet from right now. And when I take possession of the estate, when I do even with her, so you'll have been konet from now. So that's what the older brother told the younger brother. Don't throw the get at my future wife, at the Yavama, because I will give you the property from now. So does this work? Was this allowed? So I'm Amar Baravashi. Now, Rabbi Lashi said that even though I forgot that we have the following, the Chiyosur of Dimi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, over the name of Rav Yochanan, as we mentioned many times, we had Amoraim traveling back and forth from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and they would often come from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel and tell us the dinim that Rav Yochanan had taught. So Rav Yochanan, it was said over in his name by Rav Dimi, HaOmer, if a person says L'chaveiru to his friend, Lech u'mishoch parazu, go and make a kinyan mishicha on this cow, and therefore you'll have acquired this cow, but you shouldn't fully acquire the cow, it won't be yours, only after a 30-day period of time. And now, where is the cow at 30 days? He is acquiring this cow no matter what, even though it's not in his property, it's out somewhere in the swamps, it's out somewhere in an area where he can't make a kinyan on it. As Rashi says, it's not his rishus anyway. He can't make a kinyan mishich on it or any sort of a kinyan on it right then and there. Nevertheless, it acquires it. In fact, he does acquire it. So even according to this opinion that Rav Dimi brought down from Yochanan, that here he made the mishicha and the kinyan took effect 30 days later, but it took effect from the kinyan that he made right now, albeit he only acquires it 30 days later, Hossam, the only reason why that worked over there was biyado, because if he wanted to, he could have made the kinyan right then and there. Make the kinyan mashiach, and the cow is yours from right now. So since he could have made the kinyan from right that moment in time, so therefore it can work 30 days later, even though the cow is no longer in his possession, in his rishus, that he could make the kinyan on it. As opposed to here, by the case of the older brother telling the younger brother, I'll give it to you from now, and you'll acquire it actually only when I do yibam on her, he didn't have the ability to give it to her right now because it doesn't belong to him. So therefore, even according to Rav Divi's understanding of Rav Yochanan, that such a kinyan would work with the cow, it wouldn't work over here with the possessions of the yavama. So this is what Rav Divi said in the name of Yochanan. But now, when Ravin came over from Eretz Yisrael, he said over in the name of Yochanan what seems to be a stira in what Rav Divi said about Rav Yochanan. And Ravin, when he came over, said in this exact same case, lo kani, one would not acquire the cow if he made the kinyan now and it was to go into effect 30 days later. So we seem to have a stira in the opinion of Rav Yochanan. So he says, lo kasha. Rav Divi and Ravin aren't arguing. They're talking about different cases. Why is that? In the first case, where Rav Dimi said, the Rav Yochanan says that the kinyan does work now for 30 days later. That's when he said, make the kinyan Mashiach right now, and you'll acquire it from right now for 30 days later. But in 30 days from now, you've acquired it retroactively from now. That's why Rav Dimi said that Rav Yochanan said it works. But in the case where Ravin came and said in the name of Rav Yochanan that it doesn't work, he didn't make the kinyan from now. He said, do the Mashiach now, but you'll be koned only in 30 days. There, Ravin said that Rav Yochanan holds that it doesn't work. So the two cases are in the stira, and the bottom line is that we paskin over here that the young brother can't, in fact, acquire the property neither before the Yibam and can't even acquire it after the Yibam because, as we had pointed out, the property is fully meshubit for a ksuba, and the brother who does Yibam doesn't have the right to go sell any of those properties, according to Rav Yosef. Now, the more continues, it says, Boi minei me'ula. They asked Ula the following shaila. Yibam, if the man does Yibam, the achakach chilek, and then he went and gave away some of the estate to the other brothers. So he divided it up, similar to what he actually said he would do. Mao, what's the locha? So Ula said, we pass like Rav Yosef, lo osav lo klum. Very good. Simple statement. Very good. Follows the opinion of Rav Yosef. But then the Gemara says, they asked him the following shaila. Chilek, if he first divided it up, the achakach yibim, and then he did the yibim, similar to what we said over here in the story of Masa Vachasya. The first case was like the story in Pumbadisa, and the second question that they asked Ula was like the story in Masa Vachasya. Chilek, achakach yibim, what's halacha there? And Ula said the same thing, loss of lo klum. Gemara is puzzled because if the first case was loss of lo klum, then certainly the second case is loss of lo klum. The Gemara says, Maskel Rishesh, Rishesh's ass. Hashta. In the first case, Yibim, where he did the Yibim and he did the Chalukah afterwards, Vachachil, you said loss of lo klum, we pass like Rav Yosef, and that it's absolutely of no halachi status. He can't divide up the estate. The entire estate is Meshubit to Ksuba, and he doesn't have the right to sell any of the things of his brother. So if we said in that case, it's after the Yibim, the Chalukah doesn't work. Achakach chilek loss of lo klum. So certainly, if he divided it up before he owned possession of a chilek, achakach yibim, would you have to ask that question? If in the first question that was asked to him, it was loss of lo klum, so kal v'chomer. In the second case, it's loss of lo klum. Why did he have to go and answer that question? It was obvious. So the Gemara says, no, shnei ma'asim havu. It's not a series of questions that were asked the same day in the Beis Medrash. As Rashi says, in Dibur Ma'asim, shnei ma'asim havu, misha shalzu, lo shalzu. The person who asked the first question wasn't around at the time that the second question was asked. The lo shema achron es harishona. And the person who asked the second question didn't know anything about the first question. Shelo nishalu yachad b'beis ha-medrash. They weren't both asked at the same time in the Beis ha-medrash. And therefore, it was legiris to b'yalma. This was a pure case of learning. Somebody asked him a question. A rav could be asked a question on Monday. Could be asked a much simpler question on Tuesday. He'll answer the question on Tuesday, even though he answered the question on Monday. One has nothing to do with the other. Ella. The way the questions were asked, that's the way Ula answered them. So the fact that he answered question number two, which was obvious, once he answered question number one, it wasn't obvious to the person who asked question number two, because he wasn't there at the time of question number one. And I'll show you this is correct. He also, Ravin on Reish Lakish, when Ravin came from Reish Lakish, he said over the name of Reish Lakish, Ben Yibem V'yachakach Chilek, Ben Chilek V'yachakach Yibem, Lo Oso Lo Klum. Reish Lakish too agreed with the opinion that Ula had just brought down that they asked Ula these questions, and Reish Lakish's opinion was exactly the same as told to us by Ravin when he came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. And the Hilchasa, the Gemara concludes and says, Lo also the Loklum. We, in fact, pass it like this, we pass it like Ula, we pass it like Reish Lakish, we pass it like Rav Yochanan had said, that we pass it like Rav Yosef, that in fact the properties of the Yavam are that he inherited from the dead brother are all meshubah to the ksuba, and he doesn't have the right to be mechalik them, except in the way that we said that Rabbi Abba had said he could go divorce her and then remarry her if he was a Yisrael. Okay, we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, "V'chachamim omrim peros hamuchubarim lekarka shelo." We said in the Mishnah that when the Yavam inherits from the brother and their peres is still attached to the ground, so the Mishnah said they belong to him. Now this was very strange. So this doesn't make any sense. We pointed this out in the Mishnah. We said we'd answer it now in the Gemara. It all belongs to the wife being mishubit to her ksuba. So why are the nechasim that are that the mechubarim lekarka, the peres of mechubarim lekarka, which are essentially nechasim that the dead brother had, who is now being inherited by the yavam? So why shouldn't they be also lien for the ksuba? So a very, very good question. Where says Amar Shlokish? Yeah, it was a mistake. To me, when you read this Mishnah, you change the word around from Mechor Mekarka L'Shalau, read it to Tini Shalau. They actually belong to her. They're Meshubah to her. Then he has to go sell those produce that he does get when he does pick them from the ground, buy Karka with them, and the Karka belongs to her, to being Meshubah for a Ksuba, and he gets the rights to eat the Paris of that Karka. Okay. Then we quote the Mishnah, Kansa Harehi Kishto. Once he goes and marries her, when he does Yibam, then she's his full-fledged wife. We learned this in Gemara and Yivamos as well, and our Mishnah says the same over here. So Gemara says, why are you telling me this? What's the purpose of teaching us this din in the Mishnah? So I'm Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yossi says, Rabbi Chanina. The purpose is, Lomar, Shemegar Shemeget. Now, if he were to go and divorce her, Chas V'Shalom, so then he would divorce her by giving her a get, and not by doing Chalitz with her. Once he does Yibam with her, she's his full-fledged wife, and the only way she leaves that marriage is via a get, not via chalitza. And it also tells us with machzira, as long as he's a Yisrael and she didn't get married to somebody else, he's allowed to be machzir gushaso. He can go and remarry her, even though she once was his brother's wife. Once he did yibum with her, he's allowed to remarry her, even if he divorced her. Shmuel says two things over here. Megarsha beget pshita, that he goes and divorces her with a get, pshita. Why would you think that he shouldn't divorce her with a get? She's fully married to him, and the only way out of a marriage like that is via get. Shmuel says, no, I might have thought, Ma'u detema, the pasuk tells me, v'yibma amrachmana, that he has to do yibma with her, the Torah says, so that may be that even when he's married to her, he's still considered like a yavam to her. V'adayim yibumim harishonim aleh. One might have thought that their marriage is not considered a normal marriage, it's considered a yibam marriage, which of course it is, but that means that the dinim of yibam still apply, which means that lo tiske lo beget, ele b'chalitza, that maybe if he wants to get out of that marriage, instead of, quote, divorcing her, he does chalitz with her. That's what I might have thought, because you might have thought that the yibum status is still there. No, that the yibum status may be the reason why they're married, but now she's a full-fledged wife, and the only way out of that marriage is if he divorces her. He has to give her a get. Okay, that explains the first statement that Rav Yosef Ruch Hanina said. What about the second part where he said machzira? He's allowed to go be machzir grushaso, assuming he's not a kohen, and she didn't get married to anybody else, so he's allowed to be machzir grushaso. So again, the word says pshita. That's the regular din. We know that din. It says beferish in the Torah that a Yisrael who divorces his wife, as long as she didn't get married to somebody else, is allowed to go and remarry her. So why would you think that the Yavam is any different once he marries his wife? She's now considered his wife, so why wouldn't the din of Machzir Gushasu apply to him as well? So the Gemara says, we turn to Pei Beis Omud Beis. The Gemara says, no, I might have thought, Ma'u detema mitzvah de Rama Rachmana alei. The mitzvah of Yibam, which the Torah said he has to do, again, in those days, originally, the mitzvah was preferably to do Yibam. Again, as we said many, many times today, the mitzvah preferably is to do Chalitza. So, since he did the mitzvah that the Torah demanded of him, so I might have thought, Hashta, take him alevi, iser eshesach. So, once that mitzvah is done, you should not be allowed to go and remarry her because of the iser eshesach. Tosos addresses the question that many of you are probably thinking about, Tap Tosos, Ma'u detema, where he says, Ha pshita, dikishiyadba, it's possible that once he does yibum with her, mutar lavo aleha bios harbe. He's allowed to stay married to her, not only do the bio rishona and fulfill the mitzvah of yibum, but then he can continue to live with her for many, many years, healthy and happy together, have relations many times with her, kamoshi yitz, as much as he would like. And viles lon lemeimer, and we don't say, well, mitzvah the Rama Rachman alei of the bio rishona. And we don't say, well, he did the mitzvah of the bio rishona, and the bio shnia, the bio shlishis, every other bio after that is osur. No, we don't say that. The svaruhu, because it just makes no sense whatsoever to say that, because the svar is as follows. The law of Rachmana, the Yibma, the Torah didn't tell us to do Yibma with her, Kedeh Ligarsha, Lialta, that he should divorce her after having relations with her one time. El, clearly, it must be that he's allowed to stay married to her. However, Tosus adds, Avo binisui achrina, once he divorces her, and we're dealing now with a new marriage, maybe our Gemara is correct. Maybe she'd remain with the Isser of Eishasach, as the Gemara says. So therefore, Kamash Malon, the Chiddush over here, is that, in fact, that's not true. the Isser of Eishesach is no longer present for the man who did the Yibam with her. Obviously, all the other brothers, the Isser of Eishesach would still apply, but not for the one that did Yibam with her, and he could be Machzir Grushaso if it's permissible. Moshe says, no, why don't we say like this Habamina Vei Mohochanami? Why don't we say that the Isser of Eishesach should apply to him once he's Megarisher? So Gemara says, because the pasuk says, Amakra ulakach l'isha, he does even with her, and she becomes his wife. Once she becomes his wife, this means, kivan shalakacha, once he takes her in Yibam, nases ki'ishto. She's his full-fledged wife, and he's allowed to go and remarry her. There is no persistent isser of Eishes Ach. Then we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, bilvad, she takes ubos al nirse bala rishom. We said that, yes, the woman becomes his full-fledged wife with one exception. The one exception is that her ksuba is paid for from the properties of her first husband, the dead husband, and not from the properties of the new husband, the brother. So the Gemara says, my time, how come? Why doesn't she get the ksuba entitlements from the new husband? Like every wife has the ksuba from her husband. So the Gemara says, because Isha hiknu lo min hashamayim, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to say, gave him this wife. It wasn't his free choice. And therefore, the ksuba comes from the first husband and not from the second husband. That's the din. However, if you remember, I said this already several times. We learned this in Yevamos, and we learned it again now here. The last Lomerishon, let's say the first husband, Nebuch was a pauper. He had no properties, and he couldn't pay off her ksuba. But the second husband, the one who did Yibam with her, the Yavam, so Baruch Hashem, he's a wealthy guy, and he could pay off her ksuba. So in this situation, the less Lomi Rishon, if the first husband doesn't have any money and can't pay the ksuba, it's Lomi Sheni. So then she does have the right to go get the ksuba from the new husband. Why? We want to make sure that this woman doesn't get easily divorced. The ksuba, one of the purposes of the ksuba, is to give some financial considerations into the fact that he won't divorce her suddenly. Oh, she burnt this up, and that's it, you're out of here, I'm getting a new wife. And he divorces her in his anger. So in order to prevent that ease of divorce, so, whoa, I got to pay her $100,000, maybe I'll calm down in the morning, we'll make up. So therefore, in this situation, we said if the second husband has no responsibilities, and there's no ksuba for the first husband, so he's not losing anything. He inherited the first husband, but he didn't inherit anything because there was nothing there. So it would be very easy for him to divorce her. So the rabbis instituted that the first husband doesn't have property, so then she has to get a ksuba from the second husband. And Tosos on Daf Pe Aleph, Amad Aleph, asks a very important question. And if you look at that Tosos Dibur Maskel HaRotzeh, if you look into it, three lines into it, where it says, V'im Tomar, Mikol Mokom, Ma Masedes, then in fact, how does anything change over here? So then what difference does it make? You're telling me, oh, the dinner she doesn't collect from the second husband. But the bottom line is, if there's property in the first husband, she's collected from the first husband. If there's no property in the first husband, she's collected from the second husband. So bottom line is, what difference does it make to tell us this din that she collects the ksuba from the first husband? That's the difference between this and a regular married situation. If the first husband doesn't have, she collects from the second husband anyway. The Tosfos is a very important idea. V'yesh lomar, the mafsedes shetzricho lachzor v'litrov halekuchos. No, here you have an interesting din, that if the first husband has no property extant, right, but he had sold properties, those properties were previously meshuba to her ksuba. So under normal circumstances, if the husband, for example, in a regular case without a yavam, if the husband has properties that he sold, the wife can't go collect from those properties if he has other properties present. She can't go to a liened property ahead of a property that's extant in his possession right now. However, here, even though the first husband has no property right now, so one would have thought you go to the husband, the new husband, and take from his properties. No, you're allowed to go collect from the liened properties that the first husband had sold after they were married, because those have a prior shibud on them, instead of going to the second husband with his extant property. So that's a big difference over here, and that's the chiddush of our Mishnah, Tosfos says. The Gemara continues and quotes the Mishnah, Lo Yomar Lo Harei Ksuba Secha. Yavim is not allowed to say to his wife, here's your ksuba. As we pointed out previously, it's Kidei Eva, because she's going to say, he's already thinking of divorcing me. What's he telling me? Here's my ksuba. But in fact, all of the properties of the first husband are Mishubad for her ksuba. Now, why does it say over there, V'chein, my V'chein? Why did it have to say the same thing applies with a regular husband and his wife, that in fact, he can't say to her, Lo Yomar Lo Harei Ksuba Secha, you can't go and do this. So Gemara says, why did he need to tell us that? Because I would have thought, Ma'u detem, I would have said on my own, Hasam hu, only in that situation. So actually says, Hasam hu, Gaba Yevimto, in the case of the Yevama, I would have said, Kamrina Shalo Yichid Lo Mos, Lefnei Shulchano. Only in the case of the Yevama is he not allowed to say, here, go, you can collect your ksuba from this property, and the rest of your property that you have from your first husband, I'm going to go and sell. Why? Because the Lo Kasav Law, the Kenai, Udikonina, because he didn't write Iksuba saying that anything that I have purchased or anything that I will purchase, the Kanai means purchase in the past, Udikonina means purchase in the future. So anything, as Rashi says, the Kanai means Kvar, I already purchased, and the Kanina means Shani Osid Liknos. He didn't write that. The dead brother wrote that. And therefore, I would have said that in this situation, he can't go and do this because the woman is not going to be absolutely convinced that he's going to pay her ksuba. Because if these metal, and he puts on the table, he says, here's your $100,000, take it, and that's for your ksuba. So we're concerned over here. As you can see in Dira Maslow, the Kanini, you continue reading that Rashi, he says, Hilkoch, Ika, Eva, there'll be a lot of concern and hatred over here. The Lo Som Chadaita, Shalayov Du Amos, if that money is lost, well, the husband has burned through all the other properties of the dead husband. Her new husband, the Yavim, has burned through all those other properties. There'll be nothing for her to collect the ksuba. So that's going to lead to a potential discord in the marriage. It's going to lead to Eva, because he never wrote the Kanoi or the Kanina. Avalach, in the case of a regular husband or wife, without the Yavim aspect, the Kosovlo, he wrote the ksuba that said the Kanoi, anything that I've already purchased, or the Kanina, anything that I will purchase, will be Meshuba to your ksuba. I might have thought in that situation that she's not concerned. Okay, put the $100,000 on the table, and if this $100,000 somehow gets lost or gets used up, Ema sam chadaita. She knows that she still can go collect from the rest of his properties because he wrote the Kanoi or the Kanina, and therefore there won't be Eva. So that's what I might have thought. Kamash Balan, no, that still will lead to Eva. And therefore, it's not allowed to be done as well. Kamash Balan, that it applies in both situations. The husband can't say, here's your money for your ksuba, but in fact, all of his properties are meshubed, both in the case of the Yobim with the first husband's properties and in the case of the regular marriage with all the husband's properties. Well, continues to quote the Mishnah. It says, Gersha, if he divorces his Yibam wife, Eilu Elik Subasa, then she's only entitled to the Ksuba from the first husband. So where it says, Gersha in, Lo Gersha Lo, it implies that if he divorces her, now he's allowed to go and sell the rest of the estate. Once he pays off the Ksuba, he can sell the rest of the estate. Now, that implies that if he didn't divorce her, he's not allowed to go sell off the rest of the estate. Even though they're fully married, husband normally is allowed to go sell off the properties in the estate because the wife will do a lien on them and go take them for the lukucha so he doesn't have any money extant at the time that he dies or if he divorces her. So in this situation, he's not allowed to go do this as the yavam. He can't sell off any of the properties even after the yibam of the first husband. So kamash b'lan, this is in accord with what we said. Because Rabbi Abba, in yesterday's year, the Rabbi said if he wants to go sell in those properties, there was only an eitzah that he should go and divorce her and then remarry her. Oh, so our Mishnah is in accord with what Rabbi Abba said. Finally, we quote the Mishnah again, Herzira, if he goes in his box of grushaso, harei he could call it noshim, the ein lo elik subasa. She's like any other married woman, but we said that the ksuba is from her first husband, and she's only entitled to one ksuba, and that ksuba is from the first husband's properties. So Gemara says, Herzira, my kamashal, what's the chiddush over here telling us if he remarries her that that's true? That's true already for everybody. We know that. Tanina, we learned this in a mission that we'll learn next week, Mitz Hashem, on Daf Pei Tesamut Beis, where it says over there, Hamagari says, so isha umachzira, if a man divorces his wife, and then he's a Yisrael, she didn't get married to somebody else, he's allowed to be machzir grushasu in that situation, heter gomer. So the ksuba that he gives her is almanas ksuba rishona machzira. He gives her the exact same ksuba as the first one, never paid off the first one, so she's only entitled to one ksuba in that situation, because he's machzir grushasu. So therefore, the ksuba that he gave her the first time is the exact same ksuba that will work for the second marriage to her. So we already know this then. So why do you have to tell it to us in the Mishnah that the yavam, the same thing applies with the yavam? That if he remarries her after he divorces her, so she has the same ksuba as the first ksuba, which is that all of her ksuba is paid for the properties of her original dead husband. So the Gemara says, "Ma'al d'tema, I would have thought maybe there's a difference in yibam versus the case of a regular wife. Ma'al d'tema ishtohu. In the case of a regular wife, she's his full-fledged wife. Diyu kosav lo ksuba minei, and he wrote the ksuba for her. So therefore, we have no problem saying that the same ksuba that he wrote for her should now be the ksuba for the second marriage." But by Yidavama, the low EU Kosovo, he wasn't the one that wrote the original Kasuba. It was his dead brother that wrote the original Kasuba. So I might have thought, if he divorces her, Hecha de Garsha, since he divorced her, the Ahadra, now he's Masa Grushoso, Beheter, so Emo, maybe I would have said Ksubasa Minate, that he has to write a Ksuba for her, and not take the original Kasuba from the dead brother. Kamash Vulan, our mission teaches us, no, even in this situation, Masa Grushoso uses the original Kasuba, whether it's a regular husband with a regular wife, or whether it's a Yibam husband with his Yavama, so the original Kasuba is the one that we use for the second marriage. She's not entitled to collect two ksubas. The first one she collected, and now she gets married again. She gets a new ksuba. No, it's the same ksuba. Now again, if it's some time in between, and she did collect the ksuba, so then they have to write a new ksuba for the second marriage. Okay. Amr Yehuda, who really tells us, Barishana Yukosul Basula Masayim Lialmana Masayim for Basula Uliamana Mana, and for Ba'ula, a woman who'd been previously married, you write a mana. Now, I think I mentioned this previously, but I'm not sure, so I'll say it again. Rav Shachter Shlita says that the standard way that people understand this is that it's a difference of 2 to 1, that there's 2 mana, 200 zuz for a basula, and 100 zuz for an amana. That's what we had said. The word almana means she gets a mana. She only gets 100. But there are those that say, no, there's only not only a difference in the total number, but there's a difference in the type of zuzim that we're talking about, that the basula gets the tsuri zuzim, which are 8 times as valuable as the regular pshuta zuzim. So therefore, there are those that say that the masayim that she gets is actually 16 times more than the mana that an amana gets. Not twice as much, because you're dealing with different type of zuzim. In any event, the simple understanding is that it's a mana and masayim. It's 200 and 100. Let's just leave it simple as that. So Yehuda says, they originally wrote a ksuba for a woman, and as Rashi tells us in Diba Masach, you call him the law hayu mishabdim nirseim liachrayis ksuba. They wouldn't go and say in the ksuba that all of my properties are lien to pay off your ksuba. And they just said, if I have properties at the time of the divorce or the death of the husband, so then you'll collect your ksuba from those properties. But if not, my properties aren't mishubat to you. All the properties I had and sold aren't mishubat to you. So that was the original way. And what happened? For him, askinim. And these men remained unmarried. Law, you know, some nashim. The women didn't want to marry them. Why is that? Rashi says, shol yirot so sli nasilem. Women didn't want to marry them because the women said, amru, if the husband dies or if he divorces me, lo nimtzo ligavos klum, we're not going to find any properties. He'll have sold off all his properties. And the money that he has, shayorshim yatsniu mos shel yerusha, the inheritors of the husband, he had children from another wife, they're going to hide all the money and not give it to me. So therefore, the women said, we're not marrying you. And these men grew old without getting married. So along comes Shimon Meshetach. So Shimon Meshetach comes along, and he institutes the following policy, called the Chosav Achroyim L'Ksuba. So he wrote, in the Ksuba, all of my properties that I have, that I will have, are Meshubit to your Ksuba. Oh, all of a sudden, the women weren't afraid to get married, because they knew that they could go to Beis Din and be able to collect the Ksuba if it wasn't easily voluntarily given, and therefore, the women now weren't afraid to get married. And Tanya Mihochi, Rishon Meshetach has a brisa in support of what he said. But Rishon, the brisa says, "Hayu kosim lebesula masayim liamana mana." Originally, they wrote the standard ksuba for a besula for 200 and for an amana for 100. Vayu maskinim, and the women didn't want to accept this for the reasons that we just said, because they said, if we don't have the properties mishuba to this, we don't have a guarantee that we're going to get our ksuba. So they didn't want to get married. Vayu nosu nashim, and these men couldn't find women to marry them. Hiskinu. So therefore, the basin came along and was Masaki Shuminichno from the base of Ia. So originally they said, go put the money of the ksuba in the girl's father's house, Bevei Savia. And this way, the ksuba is already paid for. It will be an escrow account that the ksuba is already paid for. But that didn't work out well. Vadayin, kishu koesala, it didn't work out well. Because if the husband got mad at his wife, he would tell her, Omerlo, he would say, that's it, you're out of here. I already lost the money, so to say. I paid the money of the ksuba, so there's no deterrent. There's no financial deterrent over here. He says it's out of his mind, out of his concern. It's already in an escrow account. So he's not losing it. It's not coming out of his bank account. So he already paid it. And therefore, he'll be very easy and quick to divorce her. So therefore, the rabbi said, we'll make a different takana. His scheme, they said, so they would leave it in their father-in-law's house. In other words, the husband's father's house. So he would put it in an escrow account over there. And the rich women, what would they do with this money? So Ashiros, also, so song, colossal, shall kesef, shall zob. So the rich girls who had a large kasuba, there was more than the 100 and the 200, there was a lot additional Tosefus kasuba. So the rich girls would take that money that was in their father's house, and they would use it to make colossos. Rashi tells us that colossos are kamin sal, a certain type of basket that she would put, shemanechas al rosha, she would put on her head, minosenes bo plocha, and she would go and put her sewing equipment in that, liachash nismali, apelach, tovut, and then when it was filled up, she would go and sew with it. She would be tubby and she would spin with it. Now, that's what the rich girls did. Anios, the poor girls who didn't have such a large ksuba, hayu osos, osa, they would go make it into, now, we have the gear, so ovit shomeme raglayim. We have the gear, so they would make it into a urinal. They would make it into a container to put urine into. Now, if you notice the hay in the Masoras HaShas over here, he says that that wasn't Rashi's gear, so, because Rashi explains over here, mitoch shepiresh, Rashi, from the fact that Rashi explains, what is this Ovid? He says, Lim Meme Raglaim. He clearly didn't have the gears in the Gemara of Ovid Shom Meme Raglaim. That's why Rashi tells us what this Ovid is. Shlo Yubagur Sosam, these three words, Shlo Shatevos Halalu, Shom Meme Raglaim. In fact, Others, such as Tosfos over here, have a different girsa. They have the girsa Avichal Nechoshes Karsino, not Avichal Meiraglayim, because it doesn't make sense that you would have a gold or silver urinal over here, and instead they had some sort of a container that was made out of copper. Shinosun bo anovim, they would normally put into it grapes, Tosfos says. Umelichin lematzarta, they would go carry it there to the grape press, and you have a similar situation that were in Bava Metzia, in Peru, Ezu Neshef, which says Al Avichal Anovim. And therefore, Kain Yerul Bein Atam. That's why he has the gears over here of Ovid Shol Nechoshes. In any event, the poor women would make some sort of a smaller container out of this gold and silver that they had. The rich women would make big baskets out of it. Vadayin, but still, this didn't work. Kishit Kowei Salel, when the husband would get mad at her, so Omer Lo, he would say to her, Tali, Ksuba Sayich, Utsi, go take your Ksuba and leave. Again, it was, so to say, out of his real domain. He didn't consider that his anymore. It was her basket, her urinal. These are personal things that he wouldn't want to take back, so to say. And therefore, it would be easy to divorce his wife. And therefore, Achibo Shimon Meshetach, the Brisa supports what Shimon Meshetach did. Achibo Shimon Meshetach comes along, and he Nezakein V'sikein, he makes the Takana Shei Kosev Kolo, Kol Nechosai Achroyin L'Ksubah, so that he instituted. And this is what we have in Ksubah today, that anything that the husband has purchased or will purchase is Meshubad for the wife's Ksubah. This concludes the beautiful parak of Isha Shenoflu, Hadron Lecha Isha Shenoflu, Hadron Lecha Isha Shenoflu, Hadron Lecha Isha Shenoflu. Again, it's a very short shiur, so we'll go on and pick up another Amud in our preparations for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot to make lives easier for the people that are listening online to my shiur. You can't listen, obviously. I can't dictate, obviously, on the yomtivs. So therefore, make your life a little bit easier to you. We're speeding up a little bit. So we begin the beautiful ninth parak. Hakosev Leishto. We begin at the very top. Higimon Aleph. Hakosev Leishto. The man writes the following document to his wife. He writes, Din Udvarim. I will have no legal interactions with you. I will have nothing to do with you in regards to a din or in any interaction with you. Ein li b'nechasayich. In your property. In other words, I will not go and in any way litigate with you regarding your properties. So, nevertheless, the Mishnah tells us, Hareza Ocha Peros Bechaya, he's still allowed to eat the Peros or the Nichse Melug that she brought into the marriage. And the Mason, Rachman al-Lusan, if the wife dies, he does inherit her, Yarsha, he does inherit all her properties. So, what does this mean? Din Udvarim Ein Libin Chasayach, the Gemara asks. The Mishnah says, In Kein Lama Kosav Lo, Din Udvarim Ein Libin Chasayach. What does it mean then? That he said to her, he wrote to her, Din Udvarim Ein Libin Chasayach. So the Mishnah tells us it means, She'im Machra Binosna Kayim. That if she goes and sells it or gives it away, it's Kayim. I won't litigate with you in regards to you can do whatever you want with those properties. Technically, they'll be mine. After you die, I inherit them, but he says, I'm not going to litigate with you. I'm not going to go and fight with you. You can do whatever you want with those properties, even after you are nesua to me. Okay. Mishnah continues and says, what happens if he wrote to her, Kosav lo, din udvarim, ein li, b'nechasayich, u'beperosein. He says, I won't litigate with you in regards to your properties, as well as the produce of your properties, the perosein. And this includes not only the peros, as we'll see in a moment, but this includes the peros, perosein, any subsequent peros that come from the peros. So, in this situation, then he's saying, I'm not entitled to eat the peros. You get to keep the peros of all of your nifse melug that you brought in. And, however, in this situation, he still inherits of Imesa. If she dies, however, this doesn't preclude him from inheriting her. Imesa Yorsha. Now, Rav Yehuda disagrees with the Tanakama. Rav Yehuda Omer, no. Liolam ochel peri peros. When he says, I won't have din udvarim with your nechasayach and the perosim, it only means the first generation peros. But any first generation peros that you then have, so you get to use them, but I get to use any peros of those peros. Let's say you buy property with those peros, so then I get to eat the peros, perosein. Achiyotolo, unless Rudy says, he writes, I won't have anything to do with those peros and their subsequent peros. Dinudvarm enli binochasayach, uperosein, ubepere perosein, adulam, forever. I won't have anything to do with your peros. More will explain what it says, ad olam. In any event, he says specifically, he writes to her, that I won't have anything to do with your peros. Then in that situation, even Rav Yehuda's moda, that hariza ein ochel peros bechayel. However, even in that situation, v'meis yorsha, he agrees, Rav Yehuda, that he does inherit her. Finally, Mishnah continues and says, what happens if he writes to her, cause of law, dinu torim ainli, says, I won't litigate with you in any way, b'nechasayich, u'beperosein. And here, even the Tanakam agrees, if he writes, u'bepere perosein, b'chayech, in your lifetime, u'vemosech, or even after your lifetime, I won't litigate with you. Now we've introduced a new thing, even after your death, I won't take anything to do with your property. So in this situation, Even according to the Tanakhama, doesn't have the peros, he doesn't have any of the peros during her lifetime. And indeed, the Emesa, even if she dies, Eino Yarsha. He made it tonight. He said, Din Dvarim Enli bin Chosayach Uperosem Uperosem Bechayech Uvimoseach. And the Tanakam holds that this means he won't inherit her. Rungil disagrees. Rishim Gamliel disagrees with the Tanakama, and he says, Imesa, I agree with you about he doesn't have the right to eat the Paris Bechayah. However, if she dies, Yiroshana, he does inherit her. Why is that? Even though he said he wouldn't. He's making it tonight against what is written in the Torah. And you're not allowed to do that. B'chol ha'masa ha'mashkos v'torah, t'nai batal. If somebody makes a t'nai against what's written in the Torah, the t'nai is batal. And you can't make a t'nai against what's written in the Torah. And therefore, the Mishnah concludes and says, according to Rishon Gamliel, this t'nai doesn't take effect. The t'nai about not eating the peros, that's a din d'rabbanon. So he's allowed to go and abrogate that if he says, I'm willing to. But the t'nai that goes against his Yerusha, from the, it's granted to him, according to Rishon Gamliel, minat Torah, he holds that the husband inherits the wife, minat Torah. So therefore, his t'nai goes against Mashkos of the Torah. You're not allowed to do that. And therefore, that t'nai, or aspect of the t'nai, is not Mekuyam. Gemara starts off and says, Tani Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia, when he learned our Mishnah, instead of the word Kosav, he wrote Ha'omer Lishto. He didn't have to write it down. Even if he just says it to his wife, Dinu Dvarim Ainli, he didn't have to write it down. If in all the three scenarios of the Mishnah he just said it, it would also work. He didn't have to write it down. Now, more questions. Even if he wrote it down, and certainly if he just said it, Lechi Kosav Lahachi, my hobby, how does that help him at all? But Tanya doesn't say in the Braisa, Ha'omer L'chaveiro, if a person says to his friend, the Braisa tells us, Din Udvarim Ainli Al Sodazu. Now he's talking here, Rashi says, with his partner. This friend is his partner. So they have a business together. And Reuven, who owns half the business, tells Shimon, who owns the other half of the business, Din Udvarim Ainli Al Sodazu. This field that we own together, I will not litigate with you on it. And that's what he either says, or he actually writes it down. The Ainli Asik, or he says, I won't have any dealings with it. I won't have any Asik with it. Or he writes down, the Yadi Misulekasi Meno, I remove my hand from it. It's totally yours. So, lo amar klum, the Bryce says it doesn't work because this is a matana. There has to be some sort of an action with the matana. As Rashi tells us in Dibur Hamaslo, lo amar klum, the ain kan lo shor matana. There has to be an action. There has to be a giving over. He just can't remove himself from something. He has to actively give it over. And when he says the Lashon, or he writes the Lashon, that I will not litigate with you, or I won't have any business dealings with you, I will remove my hand. He's not doing something. You have to give a Lashon of Matana. You have to give it over. And he's not giving it over. So too, in the case of the man saying Dinu Dvarim to his wife, I won't have anything to do with you, with your peros, or with the peri perisim, etc., like we learned in the Mishnah, he didn't give a Lashon of a Matana. So how come it works? It doesn't work in the Braisa with the partners. Why does it work in the Mishnah with the husband and wife? So the answer is given by the Devei Rabbi Yanai. Amrei Devei Rabbi Yanai, they send the base manager of Rabbi Yanai, but dealing in the Mishnah, because save law, the Odai Russo. When he wrote this, or like Ruchia said, when he said it, it was only Arison. And at that point in time, he hadn't yet acquired those properties. And this goes in accord with both Rav Kahana and Rav, as we'll see. Kid Rav Kahana, this goes in accord with Rav Kahana. So what did Rav Kahana say? Rav Kahana, Nachalo Habol Yodim Makom Acher. If a person is going to inherit something from marriage, Rashi says, Divra Maschel Makom Acher, if you go in a couple lines, he says that in a situation, Kigon, Nachlas Ishto, his wife inherited something, Habol Lo Aydi Nisuin. Shiloh, that comes to him via the Nisum. She inherited it, and he gets the rights to use that property. The whole, umishum takanta didei, that's a takana that's made for his benefit. Tikkun Rabbanon, the rabbi set this up for him to benefit from it. He's supporting her, and he's going to be upset if she gets property, and she gets to use that property, so the rabbi's entitled him, quid pro quo, since he's supporting her, that he gets these types of properties to use, the peros. V'hu bo limchol olea. And here he's saying, I don't want it. So he's mochel on it, and this mechila works. As Rav Kahana tells us, Rav Kahana, Nachla, bo, lo, de, rav, achen, this thing that comes to him only through his wife inheriting it, or the masnola, he's allowed to make it tonight on it, shelo yirushena, that he should have nothing to do with it. So here he's allowed to preemptively, so to say, I don't want this to come into my possession. That's different than something that's already in his possession, like the partnership, where he can't just give it away without actually giving it away. He can't just remove himself from it. He has to give it away. And therefore, in the Mishnah, it's prophylactically saying, I don't want this to come into my possession. Etc. It hasn't yet come into his possession because they're only in the Erusin part of the marriage. He can prevent it from coming in. However, in a situation with a partnership like the Bryce brought down, what's already his, he has to actively give it away. He can't just remove himself from it. And this is also in accord with Uchid the Rava. What did Rava say? So what we had previously, the Amar Rava, Omer, Evshi, Betakonis Chachamim, Kigon Zu, Shomim Lo. If a person were to say, I don't want to benefit myself from this takana that the Rabbanim made for me, so a person is allowed to do so. Kigon Zu, as in the case that Rava said. What was the case that Rava said? My Kigon Zu. So we've already learned this previously, because Rav Huna Amarav, as Rava says in the name of Rav Huna Amarav, not Rav Huna Amarav, Yechola Isha Shetomer Labala, Eini nizones v'eini osa. If a woman makes more money than the husband is willing to give her in support, she makes $500 an hour. She's a big shot attorney, and the husband's giving her $50 a week. She said, "Listen, thank you very much, but I don't want your $50 a week of support. I'll keep the $500 an hour that I make myself." Eini nizones. I won't let you support me. V'eini osa. And therefore, I'm not giving you my handiwork. She's allowed to do so because the whole institution of the husband supporting was made because most women in those days didn't support themselves. Their husband supported them. They took care of the house and the husband supported them. So therefore, if she wishes to abrogate that because she makes more money than he would be giving her, she's allowed to do so. So therefore, a person is allowed to go give up a right that they're entitled to. That's giving up a right. That's why in our Mishnah, the husband can give up the right, as opposed to in the Braisa, with the partnership, he has to actively give it away rather than just removing himself from it. So this Mishnah is in accord with both what they learned in the Beis Medrash of Rav Yane from Rav Kahana and from Rava. Now, where it says, Ihochi afilu nesuanami. So then, why only are you telling me that this applies in the case where he did this during the Erusin? Why shouldn't it apply even if they're fully married? Why doesn't this din that Rav Yane teaches us, the Beis Medrash of Rav Yane that they taught us, why doesn't this apply even if she's a nesua? Why can he give up that right? Just like the woman can say in the middle of the marriage, listen, until now I didn't have a degree. Now I got myself a degree and now I'm making more money than you're giving me parnasa. I'm, for the first 5 years of the marriage, I let you be supporting me. Now I'm changing that around. I'm making more. So therefore, I'll support myself and I won't take the money from you. So that can be occurring even if she's in a sewer. So why can't the husband do this in our Mishnah even if she's in a sewer? Why does it only work if she was an Arusa? So Abaye says, Nesua Yado Ki Yado. Abaye says, because they're even 50-50, so to say, the Nesua, her hand is just as strong as his hand. The husband is no stronger, so to say, than the wife in terms of the ownership of the Nirsei Melug. He's allowed to use the payros, and she has the Karen ownership. So they're like partners, and that's why it's like a partnership. He already owns it, and therefore he can't give it away, just like the partner can't give it away by just simply removing himself from it. He can give it away. He has to make some sort of an action to actually give it away. Alternatively, Rav Amar Yado Adifa Miyada. He says, no, the husband's hand is actually stronger in the Nirsei Melug than it is than the wife's hand. And that's why he can't give it away. He's more of a partner even. It's not a 50-50 partnership. News are nafkamina between saying that they're equal 50-50, or the Rav says that his hand is even stronger. So it's a nafkamina between Abaye and Rav's answers. And Rav says, yes, nafkamina l'shomeris yavam. The nafkamina would be if she was a shomeris yavam. We have this machlokas. A few days ago, on Daf Pei, in the Mishnah, we said that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel disagree as to what you do with the Melug property if she dies while awaiting to be undertaken in Yibum. So the opinion of Beis Hillel was that it goes back to her family, and the opinion of Beis Shammai was Yachloku. So on this, there would be a nafkamina between whether you say Abaye or Rava, because Abaye and Rava understood that machlokis on Daf Pei or Midbeis in the Mishnah differently. Abaye understood it to be talking about a case where she had inherited those properties while her first husband, Nebuch, the one who passed away, was still alive. In that situation, the dead husband was an equal partner, according to Abaye, with the wife already. And therefore, when the brother, the Yavam, inherits those properties, he becomes an equal partner. And thus, if she dies while she's awaiting Yibam, so there's lack of clarity, and therefore machlokis. Do we say that the Yavam is considered to own that property, or do we say no, that the family of the wife, the father, owns that property, and therefore Yachloku. That was Abaye's understanding, because they're equal partners. But Beis Hillel disagrees. Beis Hillel said that you go by the Chazaka, and the Chazaka is that it belongs to her, and her family, her father, will get to inherit it. That's Abaye's understanding. Rava disagrees. Rava says And if the husband has greater rights than the wife, so then he has more of a status in the Nisei Malug, and therefore that can't be what they're arguing about. And therefore he says we're dealing here where the Yavama did not inherit it while she was married to her first husband, but after the first husband never passed away, she inherited something, and only then, after she dies, is there this machlokus between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. So this would be an afkamina between Abaye and Rava regarding the Shomeris Yavam as to who in that situation would own the Nichsei. But look, this is a good break point. With this, we conclude today's Shiur, and Baruch Hashem, we call off another Amud.